It's time for another episode of the Infinite Loopback Podcast, an Apple-themed technology podcast with your hosts, Brian Baggett, Jim Graham, Brad Tarver, and Jason Young.
Well, folks, we're in a post-iPhone X pre-order world, but we still don't have our phones yet as we record this. How did your ordering experiences go?
Mine went great. I didn't order one.
What?
Yeah, I didn't order one. I'm still paying for the one I have, you know, on the monthly deal with AT&T, so I'm going to let it run out before I start a new phone.
So is that the one-up deal or whatever they call it? I thought you're on the every-year upgrade or whatever.
No, it's like every 24 months or something like that, which I think I'm due for anyway, but I just want to run it out and then get on the iPhone plan, on the Apple one.
Oh, yeah. I'll finally have a compadre who's doing the iPhone upgrade program with me instead of this carrier nonsense.
Both of my kids are on the iPhone upgrade plan, but my wife and I aren't. Both of ours runs out in March on the AT&T Next plan.
Well, maybe by March, you'll actually be able to order one and get it reasonably quick.
Be able to walk in store and get one.
They say you're going to be able to do that on launch day, but we'll see. But anyway, we'll get to that.
So my experience went pretty well. I actually had my You've Already Ordered It confirmation from Verizon in my email box at 1:57 Central Time. I even posted that to Telegram, and Brian, he called BS, and I had to like paste in a screenshot of Verizon let me go early. Woo!
Yeah, I was really surprised that Verizon was open early, right? Because I was able to start the process at 2:55 a.m. Eastern. You know, it was fairly painless for me. One of the things that was kind of frustrating was during my checkout process, I'd already selected that I was going to turn in my old phone because I'm on the, you know, new iPhone every year plan with Verizon. And as I'm checking out, it's like a pop-up came before the final screen. It was like, we're offering special pricing. Would you like this fabulous special pricing? And, you know, who's not going to hit that, right? So I thought that maybe
a guy who wants it on launch day is not going to hit that.
Right. Well, so, but again, right, I had a 5-minute head start on everybody else because, you know, I got in early. Well, when I hit that, it actually removed my iPhone every year plan and was going to offer me $300 to trade in my old phone. And I was like, hell no. So, you know, when I got to the last page and it was telling me how much money I owed that day, right, it was all the taxes on the phone plus the difference of the $300. And I was like, oh no, this is so wrong. So I ended up having to, you know, completely cancel out of that. Well, when I finally canceled out of that, now it's like 3:06 a.m. And I'm thinking, I'm not going to get a phone until February, right? I'm in full on panic mode. So I go back through the process again. I try to do both mine and my wife's upgrade at the same time. The cart starts crashing. So now it's like 3:15 and I still don't have a phone ordered. So I end up going back through and ordered my phone, went through just fine. Ordered her phone, went through just fine. And by 3:45 a.m., I had two confirmations that I should have phones in my hand on 11/4 on launch day.
So here's a pro tip. If your carrier offers you anything or tries to change the terms, you better stick up that Heisman forearm and keep them at arm's length and don't let them change the deal, because it's never going to be a good thing, right? It's never going to be nice.
There were way too many screens on that walking through to buy the 10 on Verizon. I mean, I'll agree with you, Jason. It was like step through, step this, step that. Come on, go. And I actually did hit the screen and remember to click the Apple Care. And so when I got to the end, that's pretty much what I paid for. I think I ended up paying $200 and something with the Apple Care plus all the other little fees and junk that they include in, but it was $200 and something was my checkout total. My order shows still just processing. It still just says we received your order and it is in process as of today, but it still shows a ship date of 11/3. So
mine's been showing preparing to ship since like Friday or something. So it's,
yeah, well, Apple will do that. Yeah, Verizon is like, Apple, please give us enough phones. I don't know.
Brian's just sitting in there over in the corner of the room. It's already got a shipping label and everything, and they're like, yeah, we're preparing it. We're just kind of sitting around waiting for it to,
sitting on it like an egg.
Yep.
So yeah, I mean, mine was very painless. We'll see how painless it becomes if I don't get my phone on launch day. But you know, like I said, 1:57 a.m. I was done, a happy camper, and ready to go back to bed because I'd only been asleep about an hour. I think I took a nap and then got up and then went back to bed.
So my experience went really, really well. So I do the Apple iPhone upgrade program every year. And this is the first year that I've actually had to do the upgrade part. So last year I joined it. This year is the first time to try it out. The pre-qualification, they open that on the Monday before, and you're able to go through, you can get all of your, it's basically the stuff that we would normally do already, like make sure your billing address is right, make sure your shipping address, if it's different, like it is in my case, is correct. Make sure your payment method is already pre-selected. Make sure you go ahead and apply for the loan through the iPhone upgrade program. All of that is already squared away. You pick the model. The one bad thing about it, I discovered, you know, I've never done a white iPhone. I've always done a black iPhone. And this one's labeled as silver, but it's not really silver. It's white. Let's face it. It's really just a white phone. And I went ahead and did the 256 silver, quote unquote silver. And I kind of changed my mind after the pre-qualification process. Once you're pre-approved, you're not changing that. It's like, oh, you can change it at 3:01 a.m. on Friday morning. And I'm like, well, I guess I'm getting a white iPhone. I keep mine in a case anyway, and you never see it. The fact I've had a jet black for an entire year, and I've looked at it once. When Apple's getting it back, it's going to be in pristine condition.
So when they say silver, they just mean the edges of the phone.
They mean the Apple logo on the back is silver, I do believe.
And when you had the Touch ID metal circle around the button, was that metal color too?
Right, it was white. So since there's no home button and there's no bezel on the front, it's going to be, it doesn't matter which color you have on the back. And if you have it in a case, really, who cares?
Yeah, speaking of the jet black, I was looking at the devices that are on my account when I was ordering, and I had completely forgotten that my wife's iPhone 7 Plus is jet black because I haven't seen it since the day that it came in the mail.
So yeah, I basically came to terms pretty quickly with, I'm getting a white iPhone. So that's fine. No one's going to know.
I think I would have actually ordered silver had they still been silver, because I like the metal look back, because that would match my watch, even though you're not going to see it, like you said. But it's actually white. It's not silver. It's either kind of white or black. So I just went with the black again, like normal.
I chose the silver for me to match my all stainless watch. And then Kate got the black to match her black stainless watch.
I just didn't like the fact that you, once you've pre-qualified, they left that window open from like Monday to like Wednesday night or something. So it would have been nice to just change the type, not anything else, but just the type, but they didn't let you do it. So when I got up at Friday morning, I was very impressed that Verizon opened the doors early for you guys. I guess with the extra processes, the extra steps they put in the process, you're probably going
to
need it.
So this will tell you how bad their workflow was, though. You know, Jim mentioned that he was able to get AppleCare for his. Well, I went through the process like 3 full times until it finally worked for me. And at no point anywhere did I ever see any verbiage about AppleCare or adding anything on. I don't know if I was just frantic to get to the checkout button or what, but I'm going to probably add that on in the next week or so.
Yeah, the nice thing about the Apple process is that it has AppleCare included. Like, there's no option to not get it. So that's a nice thing. I will say that it took about 3 clicks to get the phone ordered through the Apple process. When you're pre-approved, if you do that, as soon as it opens up, I was done by like 3:03 or something. It was amazingly fast, assuming that you don't try to change any options. It went through really quickly. Now, when we were on Telegram and we're going through this, you know, I'm watching Twitter at the same time that I'm doing this. I'm getting ahead of myself. There's something that I did mean to mention. If you're doing the iPhone upgrade program and you're using the Apple Store app to order, always use your phone. So just as a test, you know, a lot of times people will recommend on Reddit and other places that you get your iPad and put it on cellular so that if your home internet crashes or, you know, your router reboots or something crazy like that, you still have a chance of being able to complete the process. I can assure you it matters not, because the iPhone app worked. When the store opened, I was able to get to it from my phone. On the iPad, just for grins and giggles, I'm reaching out with my other hand. I have my iPad on a stand and I'm hitting reload on the app, like killing it and launching it. It did not open for like 20 or 30 minutes on the iPad where it was open on the phone. I suspect that's the reason for this is because when you're going through the process and you're having to do the upgrade, it queries your device to know, do I want to upgrade this device or another device? I only assume that it's something related to the fact that you're going to be upgrading the phone that you have. They wager more often than not. I can't think of another reason why they would not open the store on the iPad as quickly as they did it on the iPhone. Maybe it was just me, but I was testing both. I already had ordered 2 phones by the time I was able to do anything on the iPad. So I don't know why that was, but never trust the iPad. Use your iPhone if you're going to do this. Isn't that strange?
Maybe it was just because they weren't releasing a new iPad, though they're like, well, you don't need to be using the Apple Store on this device anyway.
That is kind of odd, but I'm glad you figured it out and I didn't have to.
Exactly.
Jim would be panicking in the middle of the night.
Well, you know, I think about how many people go, well, as long as I'm using the Apple Store app, it doesn't matter which device I'm using. I'll just roll over and grab my iPad because that's easier to see in the middle of the night, and I'll do it and I'll roll over and go back to sleep. If you did that, you would have been a very disappointed person.
That would been real weird. I mean, it's like, how could the apps use a different API? That's just weird.
If it knows what device is coming into it from the front gates, from the front doors, from the load balancer, whatever, they may just say, you know what, I'm going to give priority to the phones and not the iPads. I don't know why they would do that. Kind of like the Apple Store app is always quicker than using the website. You figure coming in over a website, I mean, how many years did you guys use a website? I did it for long after the Apple Store was available, and it wasn't until about the 6S where I'm like, whoa, wait a minute, why am I doing it this way? Let's try the Apple Store app. Everyone says that's quicker, and sure enough, it is. Yeah, I mean, it didn't slow me down at all. So while I'm sitting there and we're going through Twitter, I'm noticing that the prices on Craigslist and eBay are shooting through the roof for iPhones. And one of the things that I never think to do, and Jim always gets me for this after the fact, is you should have bought an extra one so you could sell it on eBay or Craigslist. Like we did that with the AirPods, where it didn't even occur to me. Like they opened it up on a random Tuesday in December and I got mine, but I only ordered one pair. So channeling Jim, I went ahead and ordered another 256 gig space gray iPhone 10, which now I will say once I had mine initially ordered through the pre-order, everything went to hell in the app. Like Verizon, their back end was having issues. I was getting, I don't know if I put it in Telegram or not, but I did a screen capture of this weird error that I was getting. Like I was trying to go through the process and I guess it was associated with my phone number, which I had already done the upgrade on. So it was freaking out. You can't do that. But it took a long time to tell me I couldn't do that. So then I have like 10 lines on my account. So I just picked another one and said, upgrade this one. And it finally went through, but I think it's November 17th to the 24th or something, that space gray is supposed to arrive. Theoretically, I could just switch out the white one with the black one if I wanted to when it arrives, but I probably won't. But I did get one just to sell possibly on Craigslist or eBay just to see. And I hate to be a scalper, but my gosh, the margins on that on eBay and Craigslist are too delicious not to pass up.
Yeah, I can't blame you at all.
On average, it's like a $500 markup on eBay from what I was reading. Like that $1,150 phone, if you bought the 256, at a minimum is going for $500 extra. So I couldn't take that money and turn it around any quicker any other way. So.
And the thing is, you may be able to sell it locally on Craigslist for even more money than eBay.
Get a little nervous saying, hey, bring $2,000 to somewhere and we'll swap out a phone. So that...
Bring Jason with you. He can be your heavy and tell him to bring a gun.
I'll have my bodyguard.
A lot of times I do those Craigslist deals in the parking lot of like the sheriff's office or local police station.
Because yeah, I mean, they allow that, right? So that's
absolutely. They actually encourage it in some places.
Nifty. I will have to do that.
Bring 2,000 unmarked bills. Put them in a bag. No cops involved.
Note, don't start none, won't be none. Yeah, I guess I'll have to do it. The other thing I worry about is that the SIM that's in the phone is already Verizon. It's already associated with my account. I have to figure out how to make sure that's not an issue. I may have to demand they activate it on site and give me the SIM back for the other one. I don't know. I've never been through this before. So again, I don't even know if I'm going to carry through with it or just return it to Apple. We'll see. But I don't know how to deal with that right now. So I'm going to have to do a little bit of research before it arrives.
Well, speaking of return to Apple, I had been watching every day for the watch that my wife wanted to come back into stock. And sure enough, a couple weeks ago, it was in stock in one of the local stores, so I went ahead and picked it up. And when I did, the order that I had outstanding disappeared in the Apple Store app. So I thought, well, okay, it put two and two together. I had a black stainless on order. It saw that I picked one up in the store, so it just canceled my order. Nope, I got a brand new black stainless Apple Watch LTE Series 3 still in the box. It needs to go back to Apple at this point.
You got 14 days.
Then I guess I need to get on that.
You really do. You really, really do. All right, so cases. What cases did everybody get?
I got the Apple blue, like midnight. I think it was midnight blue. I don't know. There's two different color blues. It was the darker blue one. I was really tempted to buy the one that's like the folio one that like opens and closes because Apple's never sold one of those. But I just didn't know how I would like that. I wanted to see one in store first before I went down that route. And I mean, it's $100, so I'd rather see one in store and then decide if I think I would like that. But I love my Apple leather cases. That's all pretty much all I've used the last couple of years. And they're well made. I mean, I've dropped my phone, I'm not going to say often, but enough that I know that it works well to protect the phone. So I think my case will be here like Tuesday or Wednesday. It's already shipped.
Yeah, I got shipping notice on mine as well. I ended up going with the Product Red leather case for mine.
Very cool.
Georgia.
That's exactly what
I don't know what I want to say, but yeah,
That's exactly why I chose it. Now for the Mrs., I'm probably going to get her a Pelican case. She's had really good luck. She is pretty rough on phones. I've seen them survive the 4 and 6 feet drop tests many times. So I'm going to go back to the well on the one that has treated her right.
Is that like an OtterBox basically?
Basically, the Pelican Pelicans are, I would say, just as strong and durable, but they're not bulky, right? Like, they don't take all the sexy of the phone away.
I did the product red silicone and the black silicone for mine, and I think the black silicone arrives on Halloween, and the red arrives on Wednesday. And, you know, I've done the leather case. I even own the product red for the leather and silicone for the 7 Plus. Nothing wrong with the leather. I mean, I used to hate them because it seemed like they showed stains, like they would just get dirty, and the silicone is easier to keep clean. But I don't know. I just don't see paying the upcharge for the leather at this point. And I switch the cases pretty frequently. Am I the only one that does that? Like, sometimes I'll have a black case, sometimes I'll have a red case.
I used to, but not that much anymore. I have two of the blue leather ones for my current phone. One that's a lighter color, one is the darker. And the lighter one's pretty beat up, so I don't use it that much anymore. But I have put it back on there every now and then. But pretty much just I stick with that one.
I have a few different cases right now. Remember, I still have a 6S. So I have like a Darth Vader case and, you know, the standard Apple silicone case and a couple other just stuff with crap printed on the back just because I'm a nerd, you know, like Boba Fett or whatever. It's ridiculous.
Okay, so at least I'm not alone in this regard. I do switch between the red and the black every now and again. The black if I'm going on a customer site and I want to have something that looks a little muted, but the red I'll normally use in just my everyday situations.
I do not like those silicone cases. I don't see how you do them. I have trouble getting them in and out of my pockets. They attract lint like crazy. Like they're like lint magnets.
These Apple cases are, I don't know what they do. You know, Johnny Ive said that they go through these extra processes for their when they make the metal for the watch and for the phone and all that. I really think they do a similar kind of thing when they do it for silicone for the cases, because they're not just like regular silicone cases, and they don't seem to attract lint like you would think that they would. I mean, I do have a little trouble getting it in a pocket or something, like if I'm wearing
tight-fitting jeans.
Not necessarily tight pants, but, you know, I may
sporting your skinny jeans.
I may have it in my back pocket or something, you know, and I'm in the truck and I want to, you know, stick my hand back there and I can't either get it in or out of the pocket. Anyway, my wife actually, she's had a couple of leather cases the past few times, and for some reason when you get them wet or something, they just seem to bubble out and get all kind of bumps and stuff on them. So she was finally like, and it gets to where she can't even use the buttons, you know, like the sleep button or whatever. So anyway, she eventually asked for a case like my son's, and he has just a regular black silicone case. So that's what she got now.
Yeah, I don't seem to have the lint problem on mine all that often. But then again, I do have, what do you call it? I use the little Windex wipes, and there's the Zeiss Optical wipes that I have that I bought when they were on sale for like 400 count for something like $5 or something. So I routinely clean my screen. And the nice thing about having a silicone case is that even if you wipe those down with one of those wipes, it doesn't do anything to them. So it doesn't hurt them. They stay clean. Of course, I'm also a weirdo who has a phone soap too, which I use every day when I come back from the gym, which is a ultraviolet tanning bed for your phone. Basically, you put it in there for 10 minutes and it kills all the germs with ultraviolet light for 10 minutes. And I'll do that usually when I come back from the gym, and sometimes when I come in from work. They say your phone is 18 times dirtier.
What the?
They say that your phone is eight.
I've never heard of this
before. I'll tell you about this.
You're like Michael Jackson. You're sleeping in a hyperbaric
chamber. No. So they say your phone is actually filthier than a toilet seat. Okay, I thoroughly believe this, because think about all the places you put your phone: on a table, you go to a restaurant. On mine, I'm putting it on different equipment at the gym. The thing is filthy, right? I know that it is. So about a year ago, I was watching those iJustine videos on YouTube, you know, where she does product reviews and whatnot, and she had talked about dropping her phone in the toilet. And once she got the moisture out of it, she showed that she had this thing called a phone soap, and she put her phone in there and bathed it in ultraviolet light, you know, for the 10 minutes or whatever, and killed whatever germs were on it. Read the reviews on Amazon, and it seemed pretty legit. I mean, they make these for your toothbrush, right? You can put your toothbrush in.
This sounds totally like a Kickstarter, Brian.
No, this actually is a thing that exists that you can buy. This isn't a pipe dream. So this isn't something where you become a investor with no shares in a company. This is a thing. It's $50 for the plus size, which I have for the plus model phone. But you put your phone in there and you close this little coffin. It even has a little charging thing where you can charge it while it's in there. Sometimes I leave the house and forget it's there and have to turn around and come back. It's that I keep it near the door, but yeah, being able to do that. And I can say this, in the time that I've been doing this for about the last 7 or 8 months, I have not been sick once since I've done this.
So you have a tanning bed for your phone, basically.
That's one way of looking at it. I like to think of it as a sanitizer. I have put
Very
the leather.
Interesting.
I have put.
I'll admit, I didn't even know these things existed. So
what's the MSRP on one of these things?
$49.95. I'll put a link in the show notes.
I just added it.
what I've read, the science seems pretty legit. It's the same thing you can get for toothbrushes. People have these for their toothbrushes too, to kill germs and whatnot. Because again, think about it. It's not bad. 10 minutes in UV light, it's going to do something.
What the hell do I set my toothbrush on a restaurant table? No. Toothbrush stays in the bathroom or in my DOP kit when I travel.
Think about how dirty your mouth is, Jim.
Your mouth is dirty and it gets germs and it sits there wet, you know, on your,
yes,
your bathroom counter or whatever. Some of the electronic toothbrushes, like the Philips, they're not ionic, but the ones that move really fast, their little charging bases, some of them now have the built-in UV light built into the base.
See?
This sounds like hocus pocus to me. Just some more bull crap that people buy to not get sick.
That may be. This may be the equivalent of hand sanitizer for your phone, but I will say that it is not a bad idea. It's not a bad idea for the toothbrush. Oh my God. I go through, when I travel, and I travel more than I want to, I will go through toothbrushes like crazy. Like, I won't use a toothbrush more than once when I'm traveling. Like, I'll buy one, and I'll use it for the duration if I'm traveling for 2 or 3 days, and then I throw that thing away because I know the next time I travel, I'm not going to go back and use this gross toothbrush that's been sitting there fermenting in my own mouth nonsense for however long it's been. So,
God, if I had to buy a toothbrush for every time I traveled, I'd be like paying iPhone prices for toothbrushes a year.
Or if you had like a electronic toothbrush, you could just use the different little ends for it, you know.
Yeah, change the heads.
Yeah, I have that, and it's got a cover, you know, for the toothbrush, so it's always covered when I'm not using it. I've got one of those newfangled ones that they sold on Facebook or whatever, I forget what it's called, where they send you new tips like every 4 times a year or something.
Hygiene, next to godliness. You gotta watch out for that stuff. I'm telling you, your phone is dirtier than a toilet seat, and you wouldn't put a toilet seat to your face. Well, I got way off track on that one. Let's see, let's go back. So do you guys buy screen protectors at all? Do you guys buy into that? Do you think that's hokum?
I don't think it's hokum, but what I have seen is for the 2 or 3 years that I tried, and maybe they've gotten better over the years, they always bubbled or they always smeared or they got some kind of moisture or condensation up under it, and it would just drive my OCD crazy.
Do you not use this? When I say that, I meant I should have been more specific. In recent years, they've had the ones that are made of tempered glass that tend to not have any of those problems. So that's the ones I've used since probably the 6S. Now, I'm not using one right now, and I will get to that in a minute, but that was probably what I was talking about. When I saw that they made them out of glass and you didn't have those issues anymore, it became like, ooh, that looks nice. And I actually did that for a while. So I'm taking it you're not familiar with those.
I haven't tried anything like that.
I've tried those, and those are okay, but they don't stay on the phone more than like a month or so. And then I take them off and then I'm done with it. So I probably haven't used one. Probably haven't used one with my most recent phone at all, but I've used them in the past. And you're right, the new ones are much better than those, that film that you used to just have to put on your phone. The tempered glass ones are okay. But now that I know I'm getting a phone every year and I have Apple Care, I don't worry about that.
What about you, Brad?
The first generation iPod Touch, you know, this predates the iPhone, I think, maybe by a few months. Anyway, I bought a screen protector for it, and it was one of those that they claimed was made by it's made out of the same material that they put on the leading edge of helicopter blades. I can't remember the brand name right now.
Zag. I think it's Zag.
That may have been it. I was able to get it on there. You know, you kind of wet it, or you wet the surface of the phone or the device or something. I can't remember which.
But, yep, with a soap-like material. I used to do those.
Right. And I put that on there, and man, I didn't have a single bubble. It stayed on really well, but that's the only one I've ever used or ever bought was that Zag. That's one time.
Okay, so I'm the outlier here again. All right, so I used to use those same ones that were film when they were, it required like playing a game of Operation from when you were a kid to get them to go on, and even learn the tricks to do it where you have like a roll of scotch tape. So you're putting it down, and if you get like the little piece of dust underneath it, you would use the tape to lift up the connector and use tape to get the dust off. And then you'd spray it with like the air gun underneath it to make sure that it was completely clean. And you'd have to wipe it down with the lint free. Like it was like defusing a bomb. It was that annoying.
It probably took me a good 30 minutes to put that thing on that iPod Touch.
I would usually have to get multiples because I would at least mess one up every single time. There for a while. After a while, I got really good at it.
Y'all, it sounds like Brian's doing like surgery with his phone. I mean, like he's like got UV rays cleaning it off, and he's got protectors on there. You know, you're just supposed to use that damn thing, right? It's phone, right? You do put it up to your ear sometimes, or you don't even do that.
Next time we see him, we'll have to do a mall rats and stink palm his phone for him.
Would you like a pretzel?
That's awesome.
So I used to use these, and when they made the tempered glass, I'd stop using them because I didn't like the Zag and the other one that I used to use, same thing, where it was too much of a process. And I was using the tempered glass, I think, as far back as the 6S. Somebody showed me those, and they're really cheap. I think Anker makes one for like $7 or $8. And it was fine, and it worked really well. And if you dropped the phone, if you shattered it, that would shatter instead of the screen. And it was kind of like a windshield, right? It had like a layer of plastic or something in it that, you know, it would make it so that you didn't ruin the screen at all. The reason I quit using it is that even though they're very thin, they added a sort of a lip to the entire screen of the phone, basically. And as the phones have become thinner and more sleek and they have the rounded edges, you can really tell that you have one on there. I still do it for, I did it for my parents' 12.9-inch iPad. Like, they make some big ones. You can do that. And those are really interesting to put on when they get to that size. But it's still, I don't know, I just didn't like the aesthetics of it. So I quit using it. I don't think I've used one on the 7 Plus at all. But they are a popular thing. And I actually did have a moment's hesitation of like, should I get one for the iPhone 10 just because? Because if something happens, it's going to take a long time to get this thing fixed. And now what they do, they actually have a thing that goes over the phone when you're putting it on, so you can't misapply it. You put the protector in it and lay it down over the phone, and in one step, it's done right. And it's one of those things like, why didn't they invent this before?
Oh, that's cool. It took them long enough to figure out, well, our engineers can do it. Surely these dummy consumers can figure it out. But then they figured there was enough complaints from consumers like, this thing is impossible to get on. They're like, oh, we can just do this. Yeah, they didn't think they would need to do that, you know, at the beginning 10 years ago.
So no to the screen protectors. Do you guys buy any other accessories at all, or is it just a case?
Well, so Meh.com, MEH.com, on launch day had some Qi charging stations that also had a Bluetooth speaker built in. So I grabbed a couple of those. They were $25 each. I think they're like $79 on Amazon. So to grab two of the inductive chargers for that much, don't know where I'm going to put them yet, but figure they'll be put, you know, like maybe one on the kitchen counter or something. So, you know, come home, you want to charge your phone real quick or something while you're cooking dinner, you know, just take it out of your pocket and set it up there. And if I don't like it, I feel like I can probably get my money back out of it, since, you know, I essentially bought them about $50 a piece off.
I bought the same one, Jason. I ordered mine from Meh too. So they were cheap. If I, you know, I'm not expecting it to be a quick charge. I mean, I've heard that it's kind of a slower, you know, charge with those. I figured I might set it by the bed. It might be the kind of thing where I just set by the bed, and so I can just set my phone down at night instead of having to hunt for the cable every night when I go to bed. Now I can just set it down on the nightstand. So
yeah, I went ahead and I didn't order anything additional. I did get my wife the fast charger for her phone when she got the phone about a month ago, the 8, and she can't use it, as we've talked about, because she keeps her credit cards in her phone in the back, and she forgets to take those out, and that's a big no-no if you're going to put something between the back of your phone and the charger. Well, since I don't really do that anymore, I think I can use it, so I'll just move it from her nightstand to my nightstand, and we should be all set and being able to fast charge if I want to do that. I may move it somewhere else in the house, but I think I'll definitely end up using that. I noticed that on Kinja Deals the other day, they also had a slew of Anker products that were like Anker cases for the iPhone 10 and the screen protectors for the iPhone 10. So they've had some deals out there, but I wasn't sure if you guys did anything other than that, because that was on Meh.
You know, I did order one of those.
Oh, did you?
I ordered one of the 30 watt Anker plugs, like the fast charge USB-C plugs. Like an extra one of those. I figured I could use it with the phone or with my iPad, because I only had one of those. That way I can leave one plugged in here in the house and I can take one with me when I'm on the road. So, I mean, it was a lot cheaper than what Apple charges for one. So I did get one of those. I actually need to go pick it up from the Amazon locker today. It's waiting over there on me.
Which one did you get specifically, and what did you pay?
I think they were $20, and it's just the equivalent of the MacBook charger that Apple sells that's USB-C. It's like a 30-watt charger that you just plug the USB-C to Lightning in. It's basically the equivalent of that, but that's like a whole lot cheaper than Apple sells theirs for. So I just got another one of those, and I can use it, like I said, on the new phone and on my iPad Pro when I'm on the road. So
yeah, I think one of those came with my PowerCore PD Plus battery that I have. I think that's one of the reasons it's $120. But yeah, I think I have the same thing for the, because it fast charges the battery itself over USB-C. I need to plug in my phone and test that out when I get it, or the iPad Pro, and see, but I'm almost sure that I actually have that exact same one. Being able to fast charge when you're traveling. Actually, you know that the charging pads, since I can't take my high-rise with me, the 12 South high-rise that I like to use, because they break, as I had happen in my luggage the last time I took it, when I took it to Vegas, I may end up taking the fast charging with me when I travel and just use that instead as a travel charger. So that may be the little pad that you just lay it on, maybe the thing that I do. Let's see. Let's talk about what else is going on. So AppleCare, obviously you got that, Jim. I got that. Jason, you're going to get that. Did you guys see that it costs $279 to replace the screen on an iPhone X without AppleCare Plus?
Yeah, it makes me just want to like break my screen like 6 months in and just bring it in and have them replace it. Say, oh, AppleCare, here you go. Let me get my $200 worth, especially since I don't use a screen protector.
Since you're living on the edge.
Yeah, I think when I read the show notes earlier this morning, that's kind of what drove me to saying that I am going to get AppleCare Plus because, you know, you can get the screen replaced twice under AppleCare Plus for less than doing it once out of your own pocket.
Yeah, that was crazy. According to The Verge, let's see, the AppleCare Plus for the iPhone 8 and 8 Plus was $129 and $149 respectively. And that was the crazy math that they did on that was that if you have the iPhone 8 and you have to replace your broken screen once out of warranty, it would be cheaper than having to do it once with the warranty. But for the iPhone 10, it's the opposite, right? You could do it twice and it would be $257 and still pay less than a single out of warranty screen replacement, $279 for the iPhone 10. So that's the thing that scares me a lot when you order a device that's so supply constrained. You know, whether it's the iPhone 10 or the AirPods, like when I got the AirPods last year, I was really afraid that if something happened to it, it's going to take months and months to get a replacement. And those things didn't even come into regular stock until having been out for almost a year, right? It was a long time. I think February I had an issue and I went ahead and pre-ordered one because I knew it'd take till May to get there. And I thought, well, you know, if I get them replaced under AppleCare, they'll say, great, we'll fix them for you and we can get you some in, I don't know, 3-4 months. And that just seemed unacceptable. So I kind of worry with the iPhone 10. I almost want to put it in an OtterBox or similar because if I drop it and break it, yeah, great, they'll fix it. But how long is that going to take to happen? That's scary.
Yeah, like God forbid that you need a keyboard replacement on your, you know, latest model MacBook Pro and they have to send the damn thing off to fix it. I haven't listened to Gruber a lot recently, and this is not in the show notes, but the latest talk show with Serenity Caldwell, they do a section talking about the keyboards on the new MacBook Pro, and I didn't listen to the whole episode, but I listened to that one just because it fueled my fire of hatred for the problems that I've had. I mean, I'm on my third MacBook Pro here because of keyboard problems. So and they basically said the same thing. You know, it's like you barely get any dust up underneath the thing at all, and the keys start sticking. So sorry, side note. But there's a, you know, it's a good 10-15 minute talk just about how Apple has possibly sacrificed quality or repairability for the aesthetic of going super thin with the MacBook. Like, you know, that they probably could have made the keyboard better, but it might have been had to be a little bit thicker, and they sacrificed that.
So it's funny you mention that because a number of people that have popular Apple podcasts, if you listen to them, they always talk about how they don't buy AppleCare. It always kind of blows me away. And I won't name names, but you know who they are. And you listen to them, and it's like, I've never owned AppleCare on a single product. And I'm like, wow, that's kind of ballsy. Well, if you've had Apple products for years and years and years, there was a point where a lot of that stuff was self-repairable, where if something happened, you know, you could iFix it up yourself, you know, even some of the early model iPhones. As time goes on, fewer and fewer of their items are self-repairable at all. And I say this as somebody who's taken apart a number of iPhones, a number of iPads in various generations, and done a lot of repairs myself. I just don't see that being feasible in most cases because the hoops that I've had to jump through, every successive generation has become more difficult and more difficult and more error-prone. And if you screw it up, that's the dangerous thing too. If you mess that up, Apple will not fix it for any price. And I've discovered that the hard way too, of just replacing a battery on a MacBook Air, where I replaced it with the same exact factory branded battery, but it was still having an issue. And you take it into Apple and say, well, you fix it. And I'm not even saying under AppleCare. I'm saying I will pay you money, whatever it costs to fix it. And they're like, sorry, we won't do it. Go take it somewhere else to some other place to do it. We can't touch it. Policy says, if you've done anything to it, we can't fix it. So call it a racket if you want to. I'm not entirely inclined to disagree. But just know that if you try to do stuff yourself on it, good luck. It's a risky proposition.
They won't even replace a keycap in store for the latest MacBook Pros. Like if you have one key that's a problem, they want to replace the whole top panel of the MacBook Pro. They don't even have keycaps in store. If you go back a couple episodes, I mean, that's why the guy let me completely return that 6-month-old MacBook Pro and buy a new one. Because he was like, it's ridiculous that we can't do this and that you have to send this off to have the whole top panel of your MacBook replaced to, you know, to basically fix a key, which is kind of ridiculous. So, I mean, I remember it wasn't my first MacBook, but my second or third. I mean, I took the whole thing apart. I took the DVD player out of it. I put in a Caddy with a second SSD, and I had two SSDs running inside that Mac. It was really pimp. You know, you could do crazy stuff like that, and there's no way I would even want to come close to opening up this one now, because, I mean, it's, what is it, a quarter of an inch thick, if that? I mean, there's no telling, you know, how that stuff is Tetrised up in there, you know, with you trying to get it all out.
Predating all of the Retina screen MacBooks, I mean, all you basically needed was a tiny Phillips and a T6 Torx bit, and you were good to go. You didn't have any other special things that needed to happen other than having that Torx bit.
Yeah, as time goes on, I have a friend that I hang out with every once in a while that I used to work with, and he rails on this constantly. He is, you can't go in there and do this stuff yourself. You can't do any of this stuff. This repairability, it's you know, it's garbage. I can take a PC apart and do it 8 ways from Sunday. And I'm like, well, first of all, HP and a lot of these Lenovo and all these other PC makers, guess whose designs they're following now? As so goes Apple, so goes the rest of the industry. And as you see, a lot of these things, they're all becoming that way. They're becoming, particularly with laptops, laptops have never been fun to work on, even when, because I can remember doing this 15, 20 years ago, and it was still not fun to go in and screw around with some of these components. It's really not fun now. So I think that's sort of a specious argument in some cases. But when you're coming to the desktops, it's absolutely true.
I remember seeing here recently, in the last couple of months, the new Microsoft Surface got like the worst repairability score of anything iFixit has ever seen, ever, you know, like did the take apart. They were like, there's just glue and weird places all over this thing. It's basically, you cannot put it back together if you take it apart. It was one of the Surface Pros or something that they, you know, tore apart, and they're like, there's no way you're getting it back together. So, I mean, yeah, it's definitely other people are going the same route.
And what obligation does a hardware manufacturer have to make something self-repairable? They don't really have, that shouldn't even be a design consideration for them if they're wanting to do things with glue instead of screws, and they're trying to, because, you know, it's not easy for them to repair either, just because, just the way that they're designing it, it's not, they don't have easy ways to get in there and do a lot of this stuff. A lot of, as you saw with the keyboard, they had to replace entire components to take care of a keyboard, which seems crazy, but they have to have a reason for doing it. And it's, I don't think it's necessarily to screw over the do-it-yourself enthusiast. I don't even think the do-it-yourself enthusiast registers on their radar, to be quite honest. It's such a small niche market, but I don't know, man. It just seems like, especially with things like this, if you don't have some sort of protection, some sort of warranty, some sort of something on it, and you depend on this like you do, if my iPad was out of commission for a couple of weeks, it would be a real bummer, but I could live without it. I can't live without having my primary phone, which also my watch is dependent on, to be out of commission for any amount of time. Like, I gotta have something very, very quickly to replace that, or I'd be in a tough spot, particularly if I travel.
Yeah, I can't imagine traveling without my phone. I mean, it's everything. I mean, it's everything. That's why I'm so paranoid about the battery dying now, especially as fast as it goes down. If I'm playing all these Geo games that I play, you know, the battery goes down really fast. So I always have a spare battery, you know, in my backpack, or two in my backpack, just because, you know, you get paranoid.
So let's talk about Apple not being America's favorite tech company. There was an article that came out this week. The Verge took a survey of 1,520 people that's supposed to be representative of the sampling size for the census, I guess. They had some methodology for only picking that number. And you had Facebook, Microsoft, Google, and Amazon were the contenders. And in some cases, Apple scored lower than Amazon, Google, and, way surprising to me, Microsoft. Now, the thing that's really scary about scoring lower than Microsoft, in recent years, Microsoft has become basically what IBM used to be, like really relevant in the data center, really relevant in some verticals, but in consumer electronics, aside from the Xbox, there's really nothing that Microsoft's not really a contender anymore. They're not seriously looked at as a behemoth in that space. So that seems really sort of dubious to me right out of the gate. What do you guys think about this?
They're truly a software maker now. I mean, that's what they do. I mean, you know, they're back into software. They've given up on the phone. Nobody likes the Surfaces, I'm not going to say that. The Surface has a really niche audience of people who like them. But I mean, yeah, I use Visual Studio Code now as my text editor all day long, and I love it. I mean, it's a really good product. I'd use Sublime, I'd use other stuff. Visual Studio Code, which is like the, you know, it's Visual Studio Lite, is basically what it is. It's a great editor. I code in it all day long. You know, it's really extensible, you know, with plugins and everything. You know, they did a great job on it. I'll tell anybody about it, you know. And I don't think anybody likes Microsoft Office. If you do, you know, you probably like banging your head against, you know, a low roof or something. And that's where I, you know, Microsoft, they do software now. And, you know, if it's kind of like you just have to use it, so it's there. Outlook does seem to be getting better than it was 5 years ago. And that's primarily, you know, what I stay in. I avoid Word or Excel if I can.
And because of you, I'm actually using that same editor. So thanks.
So my thoughts on it are, this is kind of going back a few years, but the old I'm a Mac, I'm a PC advertising that was, you know, so prevalent for several years there. I think it kind of actually drove a wedge between you are either firmly I'm a Mac person or you're firmly I'm a PC person. And the people who kind of felt alienated by those commercials, you know, who felt like they were PC people, they're the ones that still have this sentimental fairy tale relationship with Microsoft in their minds. And so I think that's probably part of the reason why Microsoft scored so well is that's what people have been using since, you know, Windows 3.1 back in the day. And they're just not Apple people.
I look at that more as a statistical anomaly at this point. The things that are really surprising to me is scoring lower than Amazon and Google, because that's what's really, really weird to me. So Google and Facebook are advertising companies, right? You are the product for that. Your personal data. No one goes to their mailbox and likes getting junk mail, right? Nobody wants that. But yet these are two companies that have the digital equivalent of, like, if somebody said, I want the ad company that makes commercials for Coca-Cola or whatever to have all of my, I want to host my email with that advertising company. People would look at them and go, you're crazy. Why would I ever want to do that? Yet people are perfectly content to host their entire life with Google and with nary a care that you're being data mined 8 ways from Sunday. And not that if you're okay with it and you want to do it, that's fine. But let's not pretend that either of those companies have your best interest in mind when it comes to your data. And when it comes to Amazon, right, the company that is driving every, you go around, when I see shops that used to sell things that are boarded up and are out of business, the first thing I think of is like, wow, the internet has killed them. And then I think, wow, specifically Amazon has killed them. More often than not. And with them, and you see Amazon now with Whole Foods, and they're opening bookstores in record numbers. Bookstores, for God's sakes, the things that they drove out of business, right? They're locking down the internet and then turning around and trying to establish a physical presence, which I have to give them a begrudging respect for. Like, well, now that we've killed all the physical retailers, now we'll be online and physical too. You have no choice but to use us. So when you take something like that, and you have two advertising companies and the Walmart of the digital age, and Microsoft, which, unless you're doing stuff with Azure, or maybe an Xbox is pretty much kind of irrelevant in the same sort of consumer space. How can you take a company like Apple who's protected your data so well that the FBI is pissed off that they can't get into the phones? Their stores, it's been proven that an Apple store in your mall will boost the sales of all the other things in the mall by up to 10%. And they have one of the most incredible customer satisfaction rates in the industry. I mean, they gave Jim a brand new laptop, what, like 6 months after he got his, at a loss to them. I mean, what does Apple have? I don't understand how Apple has a black eye in this fight compared to the shenanigans that all these other companies pull. It's nonsensical to me.
The funny thing about Amazon in that article on The Verge was, I think they called it the evil empire that everybody loves or something to that effect, right? It reminds me of a joke I think I heard. It was either maybe SNL or somewhere like that. It said, you know, this just in, 47% of Americans disapprove of Walmart. The other 53% work there.
And to that note, Amazon is now the second largest employer in the United States behind Walmart. I saw that this week. So Amazon is second only to Walmart in number of employees now in the U.S. Like, it's like 500,000 people or something. Amazon, I have the utmost respect for their business process, like the process they've went through to get where they are and to be as big as they are and do the whole Amazon cloud and build onto that for themselves and then sell it out to other people, you know, how big all that got. And then they're everything they've done. I mean, it's just been so methodical over the last 10, 15 years. It's just crazy, you know, where they've gotten now. The one rough spot I would say right now is Amazon Logistics, which is like hire a guy with his old like beat up Nova to come deliver your package on a Sunday and it never works. So hopefully they'll get that figured out if enough people complain. And I complained like twice on the phone this week because I had some stuff that went missing.
Same here.
And you know, and I had to put it, you know, I'm like, look, I like Amazon, but logistics is crap. And they're like, well, we'll note that on your order, sir. I'm like, all right, you know, whatever. With Google, I think it's more of an out of sight, out of mind thing. You know, you don't realize Google is doing what they do, and you use it, and it does provide so much benefit for yourself. You know, hey, I need to call this restaurant, or hey, I need to look up to see how to do this, you know, cook this thing, or I need to go up, you know, look for directions for this other thing. The advertising is under the surface. You don't really see it. You can't tell what's going on in the background when you're using Google. It's super easy to use, and it's super, the benefits of using it are great, and you don't see that underbelly of, okay, you know, you just search for burgers. Now, you know, every burger place within 10 miles of your location knows that, you know, you look for burgers, and, you know, we're going to send you spam, you know, or advertisements on, you know, every other site you visit. With Microsoft, I think it's like they've made a comeback with the Satya Nadella. You know, they with Ballmer, they were the, you know, company everybody loved to hate. And now Nadella's done good things. You know, he's restored some pride to Microsoft. And so I think it's almost like a, hey, look at Microsoft. You know, they were kind of the evil empire. Now they're okay. You know, Azure, everybody loves it. It's done well. You know, everybody likes their Xbox. You know, it's more of a nostalgia now with Microsoft. Like they're the old horse in this game. I mean, they've been around since, well, I guess Apple's been around just as long, but they kind of had their dip and then then back. But, you know, Microsoft, it's more like, hey, look, Microsoft's back. I wouldn't say on top, but they're one of the big players again. You know, yay for Microsoft. And with Apple, it's exactly the opposite of Google, where everything they do is so out front and so in front of the consumer, you know, with the phones and the iPads and the Macs. And even the smallest little screw up from Apple gets blown way out of proportion, where all the great stuff they do for you is kind of brushed under the table. So it's kind of the anti-Google there, where Google is super helpful, but you don't see the bad stuff. Whereas, you know, Apple does a lot of great things for you and you kind of just take it for granted. Sorry, that was long, but.
Well, it's still funny though, that despite those types of studies, you know, the iPhone 10, which is the $1,000 smartphone, sold out in 20 minutes. So, I don't think it's hurting Apple very much to these types of surveys. I don't read a lot of stock into those types of surveys. The bottom line is the bottom line. And if people didn't like them or didn't want their products, then they would be in trouble. But when stuff like this happens, I think it's all sort of a moot point anyway.
Think about how much of the world economy was impacted on Friday, right? Assume that the supply chain predictions are right and that there were 3 million phones available on launch day, right? Right. If you sold 3 million at $1,000, that's $3 billion.
Well, not pure profit, but yes, still, that's a lot of money.
Yeah, no, I wasn't talking about profit. I'm saying just how much money actually was separated from people and their wallets on Friday. Also, speaking of the $1,000 phone, right? You know, I think you had mentioned that the 7 Plus 256 gig last year was like $979, right? So we've already kind of been on that, you know, creeping up towards $1,000, if not more. But I just did some real simple math here a few minutes ago. If you kept the iPhone 10 256 gig for 2 years, it comes out to $1.58 a day. Now, I use my phone at least 10 times a day, right? I turn on lights with it. I turn on and off thermostats with it.
10 times an hour, man.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, you know, that's how I, you know, keep in touch with the world. So at $1.57 a day, I think that's a bargain.
Yeah, it's funny to me that this is not, I don't know, it's weird. I've seen a number of people who are Android users and aren't iPhone users, but saying things like, I'd never pay $1,000 for a smartphone. That's ridiculous. And I'm thinking, is it really? I mean, if you look, why would you ever say that something should never cost X, right? The capabilities increase exponentially. I have a thing that scans my face with 30,000 dots and will unlock my face and can't be fooled very easily. And I look at just a lot of the capabilities you have built into these things, and it's things that my PC can't do. It's things that any other device that I have can't do. The capabilities are going up exponentially. The cost is not really, I don't think the cost is outpacing the capabilities. I don't think $1,000 smartphone, and again, I use my phone more than I use any other computer. I think we all do, right? I don't use my laptop that much. I don't use my iPad or iMac that much. I use this all the time, as Jim said, many, many, many multiple times a day, every single day. I don't know. The value you get out of it versus what you're paying for it is, I think it's commensurate. I think it's absolutely commensurate with what the price is.
I don't know if y'all had similar experiences as I did, but I have never had a product that more people ask me about than the iPhone 10. Like over the last 2 to 3 weeks, should I get a 10? Tell me about the 10. What do I need to know? You know, how do I order it? When do I order it? You know, how is it different? I have never had, I mean, I guess a lot of people know I do the podcast now. So they knew I was already, you know, a Mac nerdery kind of guy, but, you know, somehow I've become, you know, that go-to ask the questions to, but never have I had a product that so many people asked about as this iPhone 10. And I mean, it was huge amounts of interest, and it actually seemed like there wasn't as much out there as there has been in previous years. And I guess it's because it is so new. Like in previous years, they could make kind of an assumption about the phone because, okay, this is a 7S, so it's basically the same as a 7, but, you know, this and this changes. I mean, this is like a whole new ballgame phone. You know, there's no button on it anymore, you know, no home button, the full screen, everything they're doing with this one. And so there were just so many people that were asking questions about it. I mean, people that I normally wouldn't say were on the cutting edge, you know, I talked to them, and three or four of them ordered Friday night and messaged me Friday morning, you know, like work time Friday morning, said, hey, you know, I got up and got my phone ordered last night, thanks for the tips, you know, whatever. So made me feel good.
The other thing to consider too, right, is you've heard me mention it in previous episodes, I love my camera, right? And so I look at the iPhone upgrade every year as I'm upgrading my camera to one of the best available point and shoots on the market, and it just happens to come with a phone and internet computer attached to it.
All right, gentlemen, that'll do us for this episode. Next week, we'll have our impressions of the iPhone 10, and I expect some Animoji to be sent back and forth when you get it.
Looking forward to it, sir.
Good deal.
Can't wait for that new phone.
I just wish I was here the day that it comes out.
Me too. I won't be here either. We'll have to listen to Jason talk about it on Telegram.
Indeed. All right. Till next time. Later, fellas.
Later, fellas.
Later, fellas.
Later, fellas.
Please visit infiniteloopback.com for show notes and previous episodes. Follow us on Twitter. We're at infinloopback. That's at I-N-F-I-N loopback. I'm Brian B. That's at B-R-I-A-N-B. Jim is at Big Jim, that's at B-I-G-J-I-M. Jason is at J-S-N-Y-N-G, that's at J-S-N-Y-N-G. And Brad is at Meester Idle, that's at M-E-E-S-T-E-R-I-D-L-E. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.